This is the Live Your Edge podcast, episode 40. What's up, guys? Today we'll be talking to Stu Heineck. Stu is a master at what we call contact marketing. Funny enough, I met Stu through LinkedIn, and from there, our relationship flourished, and now we are on the show together. Stu is a Hall of Fame nominated marketer, a Wall Street Journal cartoonist, best-selling business author, and founder of cartoonist.org. He is known as the father of contact marketing, a coin turned in his highly successful book, How to Get a Meeting with Anyone. He has a long track record of successful direct response controls and contact marketing campaigns with response rates as high as 100%. This week's episode, we're going to take it even further in talking about what makes a great contact marketing campaign and how he was able to help a client secure 69,500,000% ROI, which is completely unheard of. Join me in welcoming Stu Heineck. Welcome to the Live Your Edge podcast. I'm here with Stu Heineck. So Stu, why don't you just walk us quickly through what is a contact marketer? Because this term is probably new to a lot of people.
It should be. I'm the one who coined it in the book. But contact marketing is, well, you notice that all the good things, Gilbert, that have happened in your life and that have happened in my all of our lives, happen as a result of making connections with the right people. So the question though is, how do you get in contact with people, particularly people who are very, very important, wealthy, maybe it's a CEO, for example. How do you get in touch with someone like that? How do you get their attention so that you can actually connect with them? And so contact marketing is the use of micro-focused campaigns. It could be, and I mean really micro-focused, it could be a campaign of just one person, but micro-focused campaigns that create contact with people who are just of critical importance and who can change the scale of your life or your career. So that's what it is.
And the beauty of contact marketing is that traditional marketing, you have these campaigns where we're seeing like 5%, 10%, and even 25% reply rates, but then with contact marketing, we're seeing 50, in your case, 70, even 100%.
Oh, actually, there's one that's gone above 300%.
How's
that even possible? And by the way, I started my career in direct marketing or direct mail, to sort of pull all the sheen off of it. And they used to say in direct marketing that if you got a 1% response rate, well, you were doing really well. That's sort of a typical response rate. There is no such number. There is no typical response rate. But if we use 1%, that's actually high compared to digital marketing, where click-through rates are tiny fractions of a percent. So when we're talking about a form of marketing that gets, well, you mentioned 70% contact rate, for example, or response rate to one of my clients' campaigns, or 100%, or 25%. 25% is a huge response rate to a marketing campaign. So we're talking though about campaigns that are going as high as 100% response rate. They're breaking all. In direct marketing, we used to hear that it was impossible to get 100% response rates. So, well, it isn't. Always fun to knock those things down.
But how does 300% come in? You mentioned like 300%.
Well, so in writing my next book, I guess we're going to talk about that shortly, but in researching for my next book, one of the things I wanted to do was create a replacement for business cards, because business cards suck. They're so inert. People just take them and throw them away, or they put them in a box. They don't really do anything with them. So they're not really, they're not doing what they were intended to do, which I guess is to impress people. And of course, keep your contact details around. So I was, the first part of my research for this was to figure out, well, there are some business cards that are just so amazing. You just say, oh my God, that's incredible. I mean, I'm going to keep this. I'm going to show this around. Well, so one of the examples of that was this card that was printed on a little sheet. It's business card size, so I don't know, something like that. And it's a little sheet of rubber, so tan rubber, and they would stretch it on a jig, and then print it. So and when the ink cured and dried, then they take it off the jig, and now it returns to its original shape, but all of the contact details are squeezed together. So quite naturally, people would, when this fellow handed out his card, people would take it at both ends and do this. So just so they could read it. So he was telling me, well, you know, sometimes he'll be out at a pub, let's say, and he'll get into a conversation with someone at the pub, and they'll say, what do you do? And what do you do? And then they trade business cards, and he pulls out this little floppy thing. It's like an ambush, because his card is way more interesting than the card he's being handed. And the person receiving it will take it and stretch it. And when they do that, it reveals it's Paul Nielsen's card. He's a fitness trainer. And guess what? He already has you exercising. Right? So what would happen is that people, they'd say, oh my God, can I keep this? Yeah, that's my business card. Well, these people would take the card with them. They'd take it to the office or wherever they're going. They'd show it to their colleagues and to their friends. Hey, check out this card I got from this guy. And then they scratch it. Look at that. It's Paul Nielsen's card. He already has you exercising. He's a fitness trainer. I think he already has you exercising. And people loved it so much. I mean, think about it. It's a taste of what it would be like to work out with Paul Nielsen. It would be fun, right? So people would write down his name and number, and they'd call him up and they'd sign up. And he said every time he handed out one of those cards, he'd get three or four new clients.
Wow.
So that's how. I mean, that's a 300-400% response to his cards.
So here's a question I have for that. Is he selective of the people that he shows the card to?
Well, I can see why you would ask that, because let's say if we were in a business where we needed to reach high net worth individuals, we wouldn't just hand out the floppy card to everyone. But in his case, hey, everybody should be exercising. So no, it didn't really matter much. I guess really the point with his cards, and I would call that almost a pocket campaign. I mean, that's what's coming out in the new book, is a pocket campaign instead of business cards. I would almost call it a pocket campaign, but there's no back end to it. But still, it's an engagement device that got people so excited that they showed it around. They became evangelists for Paul and ended up doing a selling for him. So that's pretty cool.
It's like, I imagine those cars are not, you know, they probably cost a bit to create. But then if you can create customers and people that are just like obsessing about the card itself, and then associating it back to you, or just leaving it around and then on the desk somewhere, it's like, oh, this guy, let me just ring him up and see what he's about or she's about.
Yeah. And I think you already get a sense of it. You know, this is what this guy, this is his approach. His approach to working out is fun. Maybe I could work out with him. You know what I mean? Yeah. It's just, all of it is very humanizing, and you know, it just takes all of the, it de-risks the contact.
So do you feel like that's what's missing nowadays, where people are just handing out cards? They're missing that sort of human element when it comes to connecting with people, not just like what their first impression is, but even when they hand out their card.
Well, I think here's what's happening. Cards traditionally have been this little chip of paper that you use to say, well, here are my contact details, let's stay in touch, or here's how you reach me.
Yeah.
Then they became something else. They became something, again, then it's sort of an arms race. How much more impressive could I make my card than yours? you know, or everyone else's, my competitors at least. And so you, so people are printing it on fancy paper stocks, and they're embossing it and having it gold foils or foil stamped, and you know, or they're having it engraved in metal and wood and carbon fiber and so on. But it's still the same stuff. It's still just, here's my name, here's my logo, here's my long, sometimes very long, stupid title. You know,
yeah.
Some people have really long, stupid titles, and I guess they think that makes them more important. I don't see more important.
Also the initials they put next to their name, like the
right, all those credentials. Yeah. Nobody cares. Nobody cares about that, and so they end up being, I don't know, they end up being thrown away, mostly.
How about like business cards that are, I received one of those cards that was printed on a credit card. So it was like a credit card, and then it's imprinted into there is their name. But honestly, I forgot what kind of business they were in. It didn't work.
Well, yeah. So here's what a pocket campaign looks like. Here's one that I made up for the book. So you can see it's a tool in a sleeve. And that tool is called a wild card by Zootility, actually. So this is actually this is actually a pocket knife, but it's thin. It's the size, it's the thickness and size of two credit cards together. And there are these other cutouts. So there's all kinds of functionality on this thing. So as a pocket campaign instead of a card, you can see that this is a fictional company and character, Mike Blacksmith's home inspection service. So I'm just imagining this is what he's handing out. And then on the back of the piece, it's kind of hard to see it, but there's a URL to go to see a video to see how to use the tool. So there's a jump off, or that leads to a jump page. That jump page sets a pixel, and now all of a sudden you start seeing ads from Blacksmith Home Inspections, right?
I get it.
That's an ongoing perseverance or a persistence campaign, and by doing that, here's another example. I'm just going to show you there's an involvement device.
Yeah.
And then there's a jump offer leading to a jump page. So this is an insurance salesman's card with a cartoon on the back, but look what it does. This is what it does.
Oh.
So actually there's a whole portfolio of business and insurance cartoons in there, which makes it interesting because he sells business insurance. So it becomes this really, really engaging thing to play around with and pass around at a networking event, et cetera. But there's also an offer for a print, a framed print of this cartoon, which is personalized. So if you go to his page, to his jump page, you'll go there and you sign up for the print and you're getting pixeled. And then you start seeing his ads. And this thing, the fourth one he handed out resulted in a sale, actually. So they're already working. It's pretty cool. What it means though is that here's this device that you can hand out instead of a business card that generates response, measurable response, sales and ROI. And you can be testing. You could be A/B testing. One pocket has one campaign, the other pocket has the other campaign. But yeah, it's like you would any other marketing campaign. So that's a pretty cool thing.
That's like taking the offline, what is traditionally offline, and
putting it in your pocket.
You're putting it in your pocket, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I imagine like that, the first one you showed me, which was like the pocket tool. Would they allow you to bring that onto the plane? Imagine.
Oh, not that one.
Yeah, like, yeah, imagine that. No, 100 of those.
There are others that we're playing with others now that are. I don't have one in front of me, but it's a multi-tool again. It's, you know, credit card sized, and there are all kinds of cutouts. It's a wrench. It's a box cutter. It's a bottle opener, and so on. But there's enough cutouts and enough ambiguity because none of it's labeled, although it's a business card. that it comes with a sleeve that says, here's where you go to get to see the video, to see the, to, so you know how to, just so you can get the instructions and know how to use it.
Yeah.
And so just that offer of the instructions is a great jump offer. It's not that we don't have to put the word free. You don't have to go get free instructions, right? Just go see a video on how to use this.
This is kind of mind boggling for me because typically, you know, when, especially in online market, you send like a freebie or some, you know, some lead magnet or something to get a prospect to engage or to enter the details, right? But now you're handing out this business card, which is really becomes that lead magnet. And then yeah. If they interact with it, now they're also pixeled and you can do retargeting campaigns on them. So now it's taking the offline component and turn into online. And you already added value to them by just handing their business card out, which in normal cases, you would not be doing any of that.
Yeah, yeah. And you know, and think about the difference because I did a survey on LinkedIn recently. I just asked, it's non-scientific, I just asked who's using business cards and who's not and why. And about half the people were saying, I don't use business cards, I want to save trees, or I don't know, but mostly it was I just if I meet someone at an event or somewhere, I want to stay in touch. We trade phones and type in our details in each other's address book, or we agree to connect on LinkedIn, something like that. And a while ago, there was an app that would allow you to just tap two phones together.
Yeah.
All of those things are utterly missed opportunities because think about it. You meet 10 people at a networking event and then you go home. Who were they? I can't even remember. They're lost, you know. And if you were going to go through your little address book on your phone, you have too many people in there. You won't even recognize the name, perhaps. They're lost. They're utterly. Just that, the action of connecting on LinkedIn. I think it's about as significant in our lives as driving down the freeway and you wave to someone going the other direction. That's it. And then there are 20 others who come by and you wave at them and that's it. You don't even know who they were, right?
Yeah, there's so many people enough. You just don't know who is.
Yeah, it's not significant enough of an action. But I'm sure people remember Paul Nielsen with his floppy rubber card.
Yeah.
You know, or the fellow who hands this out, I told you that the fourth one that he handed out, he was at a networking event. And about 2 months later, he got a call and they said, we'd like to get a quote. And by the way, we've been passing your card around the office for the last 2 months.
that never happens otherwise. Yeah. Yeah. It's like usually what happens is you get a business card or someone gets your business card and either they enter the details, they don't enter the details, and then they just toss it into the bin or somewhere in the dark corner.
it's always a lost opportunity, I think. Yeah. So pocket campaigns, I hope to see pocket campaigns become popular through the new book. And it's also part of the new model of contact marketing, which is to have a digital persistence campaign now as part of the campaign. So that in the background, you're always retargeting. The people that you're connecting with, you're still sending out these amazing things to get their attention, these micro-focused campaigns. But then you're also, whenever you have those face-to-face meetings now, you also then are handing out a pocket campaign that, because of the jump offer leading to the jump page, therefore pixeling, they're also going into that background digital persistence campaign. So it all meshes together.
Do you use a different... like for the tracker, and this is a bit more technical, do you separate it between the general people that hit your website through other sources and the ones that hit it through the pocket campaign?
Yeah, because you can set a pixel just for the jump page and then make sure you don't SEO it.
Yeah.
Or you don't want people just coming in because, oh, what's this?
Yeah, and they just find some instructions for
you're right.
This is card.
What's this tool about?
actually, what'd be interesting is if you run SEO on that, and then people see the instructions, they see the picture of the tool, but they don't have the tool, so now they have to click order the tool.
Yeah, but it's like, hi, I'm a housewife in Canada, and I would like one of these tools. Yeah, but I'm trying to reach art collectors that are, you know.
Yeah, exactly.
So I think that's about as, again, it's kind of like throwing that box of business cards off the Empire State Building and letting them flutter to the ground.
So other than handing the cards out, there would be no other way to like get these cards in front of people. And I mean, you hand them out and then people...
You wouldn't want to. I don't think you'd want to. Well, actually...
Well, they're expensive too. They're expensive to make.
I mean, you're meeting the right people. You run a golf society. I have a, I don't know what to call it, cartoonist.org. And so we're working with charities. But these are specific audiences. And those are the kind of audiences where you would hand out your pocket campaign, but you might not hand it out otherwise. You'd want to be careful about who you hand it out to. The other thing is, you know, you can buy business cards for 25 cents a piece, something like that. I mean, Vistage does that here. But something like this, that device is going to be like 10 or 20 bucks a piece. For a contact marketing campaign, but not very cheap compared to a card. So you want to be, I mean, you want to be like any other campaign, you have a target audience. It's not, let's say like most campaigns, you have a target audience. The people who are sticking their cards up on those boards are not targeting.
They're like selling plumbing services or
I guess,
like cooking services or something like that.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's well, I mean, it sounds like I never heard this method. I heard like creative business cards, but never like ones that are kind of interactive that involve the recipient and also has an online element to it. I know Steve Wozniak, his card is like,
he's got a metal one. It's pretty cool.
Metal one.
Yeah.
It has some holes in it or something, but then that's about it. There's
nothing. Still inert.
Yeah.
Other than it's Steve Wozniak's card. Still just inert.
Yeah. I mean, I never got his card. My friend got his card. He showed it to me. I'm like, wow, this is nice. you couldn't do anything with it afterward. It's just,
right.
You just remember it, but that's about it.
Yep.
And so what are the elements of a creative, pocket campaign? Like what are some of the...
Hey, by the way, should I talk a little bit about the books?
Yeah, sure.
Something about the books. They gotta know where to find this stuff.
Yeah. So Stu has his first book is How to Get a Meeting with Anyone. And I found out about Stu, after I read this book, and it's about contact marketing using numerous ways. And your second book is on the pocket campaigns.
This one.
Get the Meeting. And yeah. When is that book out?
No, so that comes out in October.
Oh, October.
So October 15th, it's out. And I get a meeting with anyone. I've been using my cartoons to break through to people my whole career. And I got really curious about what everyone else was doing, because it's a universal need. How do we all need to get meetings.
Yeah.
If you think about it, every good thing that's happened in our lives has happened because we made a connection with someone else. I mean, they don't just happen out of us. And so the question then becomes, well, how do you get meetings with the people who are that important to your life, who are going to change the scale of perhaps your career or your business? And so, again, my solution is always involved using some of my cartoons. But I'm one of the Wall Street Journal cartoonists as well. It's a great device. I don't expect everyone else to do it, but you don't need to be a cartoonist to do this, but that was my device. But I was really curious about what everyone else was using. And so I interviewed the top 100 sales thought leaders in the world by the size of their sales blog. And I asked them, when you absolutely have to break through to someone of great importance, someone who's nearly impossible to reach, what are you doing to break through? And they shared all kinds of really incredibly clever and audacious methods for breaking through. So that became how to get a meeting with anyone. And there are 20 categories of contact marketing campaign types in there. And then so the new one, this one, I responded to a couple of things. One is that people were saying, I love the book, How to Get a Meeting with Anyone, but I sure wish I could have seen pictures of the campaigns you wrote about. So I thought, okay, this next one should be a collection of case studies with photography. And it is. But then it's also, we've been talking a little bit about pocket campaigns and persistence campaigns and so on. There's a new model for contact marketing in this new book. In the previous model, we'd use whatever we were using. Again, my cartoons as an example. I'd send a big cartoon piece, and it would have a message on the back saying who the sender is and why they're reaching out and what the next steps are. So, and we get great response to that. But if we're getting a 70% response rate, it bothered me that we weren't. And these are, you know, and this is going to an audience of people that are really important. If they've really been well selected, then it bothered me that we're still leaving 30% on the table, even though 70% response to a marketing campaign is nuts. That's crazy. Yeah. That's incredibly high. That's an incredibly high number. So one of the things I did in this new book is what we really need to do is reset the baseline for response to a contact marketing campaign to 100%, which is nuts. No, it's not. I know it's marketing heresy.
Yeah.
But the thing is, there are reasons for saying that, because one is that we are seeing campaigns hit 100% already. And we didn't even have the digital persistence campaign running in the background. So I think that's going to be a big factor. But also, I was interviewing someone on my podcast, and they were telling me that they used a campaign, a lot like what I've described. They were using baseballs, I think. And they said, you know what? We were thinking we were going to get an 18% response rate. And you know what we got? I said, no, what you got? 18%. I'm saying, what would have happened then if you had assumed you would get 100%? Was it self-fulfilling?
Yeah.
So I think it's not only possible to get 100%. In fact, we just heard about, I just told you about Paul Nielsen's you could call his floppy card sort of a basic contact campaign, and that's getting 300 to 400% response because people are passing it around and going, man, this thing's so amazing, and they become evangelists for you. So there's the new model and the new baseline for response, and there are some crazy stories in there. There are also new records set for response. Well, I just told you about response to Paul Nielsen's card. So it's 300% plus, but also ROI to a contact marketing campaign. That new record is 69,500,000% ROI.
Three?
69,500,000% ROI.
That's
a crazy number.
So what happened? What happened there?
There was a company, they were a year old startup. They had made $1 million worth of sales, or sold $1 million worth of product the first year online. And then they wanted to move into Walmart. They wanted to get featured in Walmart's stores. So they applied like everyone else does. And it's a big dead end. They weren't hearing anything. Nothing was happening. Yeah. So then a couple of the guys in the company, not without the CEO's knowledge, put together a little ad in Facebook, and I think it was a $28 ad, and they ran it, but they ran it with some parameters. So it was only supposed to go to people who are in the Bentonville, Arkansas zip code that corresponds with the Walmart headquarters. And then they had to have a certain degree of education, and between a certain set of ages, so probably, I don't know, 35 to 55 or something, 35 to 50 maybe. What they were doing was targeting the top executives at Walmart, and the ad showed their spokesman with the tongue scraper tool. That was their product, and it said, Walmart employees have bad breath, but if you put our product in your stores, they won't. Something like that. Call us. Well, 48 hours later, they did get a call from Walmart, from their communications department. And it was just sort of this frantic call. They're going, oh my God, please take this down. Would you take this ad down? Sure, we'll take it down. Did this thing run nationally? They were worried it was all over the country. No. It was actually just going to you. What do you mean? Well, we targeted to your zip code with college degrees and a certain age group. We knew we were going to reach you.
Wait, so this was a LinkedIn ad or?
Facebook.
Facebook ad.
Facebook. So eventually they're saying, well, gosh, you guys are actually really good at digital marketing there. That's actually pretty, I mean, now this is pretty basic stuff, but yeah. You guys are really pretty good at this. And then the next thing they know, they're hearing from the dental products buyer or purchase manager, whatever they were, whatever she was. And she said, okay, good. Could you support an order for 735,000 units? Not going to say no to that, right? Oh, yeah. You know, of course. And it was, so it was that was about $1.5 million order from a $28 ad, but it got better. And I interviewed the CEO about this, and I said, well, okay, when you do something like that, I mean, here you've been in business for a year. You have $1 million in sales. That's good. I don't know what does that translate to in terms of value of the company? And he said, well, I figured that it was twice the revenue. So,
yeah.
So it was right at that point, it had a $2 million valuation. And I said, okay, then what happened to the valuation when you suddenly went from a startup that was selling things online, I mean, selling a product online, to being rolled out across the 6,800 store network of Walmart? What did that do to did it do anything to your valuation? And he said, oh yeah, I think it multiplied it by 10. So that meant, and that all came from that ad. So yeah. If you subtract 2 million from the 20 million, that I guess would be the new valuation because it jumped by 18 million then. And then then you add in the $1.5 million for the order. That's where we came up with 69,500,000% ROI.
Wow.
On a $28 contact ad run in Facebook for 2 days. Pretty cool. Pretty amazing stuff. There are all kinds of stories of what people have been doing to reach people. There, do you know that you might not know the name Kris Kristofferson? I'm not sure.
No.
So he was a singer, is a singer-songwriter. How about Johnny Cash? Is his name?
Heard of him.
So these are country guys, right? So Chris was in the Army a long time ago. He was in the Army serving in Germany. He was a helicopter pilot. And he thought to himself, you know, when I get out of the military, I'm going for the brass ring. I'm going to pursue my dream. I'm going to become a singer-songwriter in Nashville. So as soon as he was discharged, he went to Nashville. And the thing he wanted to do is he wanted to connect with Johnny Cash. That was his hero, or he was his hero. And so pretty quickly, he's living in Nashville, and a buddy of his said, hey, if you come to the Grand Ole Opry tonight, I'll get you in backstage. You can meet Johnny. So we're all right. Okay, so we did. Went backstage. He met Johnny real quickly. He was like, hey, Johnny, this is Chris. Oh, how you doing? And that was it. Over. Done. Yeah. Okay, all right, so what am I going to do? So then he got a job as a janitor at the recording studio where Johnny recorded, and he would keep sneaking demo tapes, not to Johnny, because you'd get fired for that, but he would sneak them to June, his wife, or his guitar player, and nothing was happening. So finally, one day he said, screw this, he was still in the National Guard, still flying helicopters for the military. So he went to space, he commandeered one of the helicopters and flew out to Johnny's place, landed on his front lawn. Wow. And then demo tape.
gave the demo tape to him.
I'm sorry?
No, he flew down in his helicopter and then he handed his demo tape.
That's right, yeah. And that got Johnny's attention. And so from that point on, they became, sort of lifelong collaborators. I mean, they formed a band together with Willie Nelson and I forgot the other guy's name. I'm not a country guy, but the point is that it caused them to break through. It totally changed the way that that Johnny thought of Chris Christopherson. And I think that's the challenge for all of us in getting meetings with people who can change our scale, which is we have to show up as human beings, I suppose. I mean, you know, if we're gonna tap phones together when we meet someone, that's not showing up very much. If we're handing out flat little business cards, it's not showing up very much. But if you're doing something that really creates some value and intrigue and causes the person on the other end of all that to say, man, I love the way you think, then you humanize yourself to this person and you start to create connections.
That's very powerful advice. I mean, I think it's crucial that everyone listening today can adopt that, because nowadays connection is, people try to take the shortcut with connection, and what ends up happening is that it doesn't work out. So the idea is to go slow, but by going slow, you're actually going faster than if you try to go fast.
Well, I think I can tell you, we are helping sales reps break through right away. That is happening. Yeah. But we all know that's not the entire goal, obviously. I mean, there is a goal of selling, I suppose. But before that can happen, you've got to be showing up with relevant and timely value. And, you know, people buy from generally, I mean, some people disagree with this, but I think that people buy from those that they know, like, and trust. And so there's a relationship to be built. And that doesn't really, I mean, that happens over time. But certainly you can break through to people and create some dialogues that lead to those nice relationships and can lead to sales right away, actually. You wouldn't believe some of the people I've connected with.
Are you allowed to say?
I've connected with presidents and prime ministers and celebrities and really just tons. And I mean, where
U.S. presidents.
Yeah.
Ah, wow.
Yeah, and then lots and lots of C-level executives and top decision makers.
So how do you get in touch with, like, president and prime minister? Was it also through sending your...
Well, I mean, in my case, it's always... my own case, it's always sending a cartoon, you know, but... which is how I did it. That's how I did it. I mean, that was really early in my career. It was, you know, here's how I started. I wanted to create direct mail campaigns for magazine publishers. That's what I wanted to do when I first got out of college. And so I got two assignments, one for Rolling Stone and one for Bon Appetit. And both of these test campaigns beat their controls, which is, I don't know if that makes sense, but you test against us. In statistics, you test against a control group, a constant.
Yeah.
And in direct mail or direct response, you test against a control, which is the best thing they've ever put out. The best thing
industry or in that company.
Yeah.
Ever put out. Yeah.
Yeah. So the most powerful thing they've ever put in the mail, for example. And I beat them the first two assignments out. So I thought, great, this is my opportunity to spread it out to the rest of the publishing industry with this story. And so I researched real quickly. And said, who do I need to reach out to? It was about two dozen VPs and directors of either consumer marketing or circulation at these huge Manhattan-based media companies, Time Inc., Condé Nast, Time Warner, and on, lots of them. So I needed to break through. And what am I going to do? I've got to use something. I don't know what to call it, so I called it a contact campaign. But I'm going to use this 8x10 print of a cartoon. I'll personalize it. It's all of my cartoons are, I sent you an example in an email, but they're all personalized. So each cartoon that is received is about each recipient who's received it. And then with a letter that said, this is the device I just used to beat the controls for Rolling Stone and Bon Appetit, and we should put this to the test for your titles. And I ended up getting 100% response to that. And not only did all of them respond, but all of them became clients. So it's 100% response and 100% conversion. It launched my business. It was worth millions of dollars to me, and it all came from a campaign that I spent maybe $100 on. So that was my first experience with the contact campaign. And that's what led me to get really, really, first get excited about, well, who else could I reach? How far can this go? And that's when I was reaching presidents and prime ministers and so on. And then finally, well, what's everyone else doing to break through? And that's what led to writing that first book, How to Get a Meeting with Anyone.
I think more people should know about this because it's not an industry standard right now to really build genuine connection with your prospects by sending, you know, like a contact campaign. And do you see that happening, you know, in the next maybe 10 years with in the marketing industry, where it's so personalized that they are able to achieve this on a much larger scale? Or it becomes a commonplace where it's companies would, you know, use this as the main way of communicating with potential customers.
Yeah, I mean, I think, well, anytime if we call this a channel, a marketing channel, it's crowded, it gets, its effectiveness wears off. But here's the thing, the first example I've found of, or the earliest example I've found of a contact marketing campaign was one that involved Leonardo da Vinci and the Count of Milan. I mean, so, and a gift that he produced a lute made of a horse's skull. And I couldn't call it a beautiful thing, but it's a pretty fascinating, like most of the things that Leonardo came up with, it's a fascinating thing. And it was used as a gift to the Count of Milan from one of the Medici family members, because he wanted to introduce himself. And so people are always going to use gifts. They're always going to use other methods for breaking through because they have to. I see this continuing until maybe AI takes over buying and selling, perhaps. There is no human element in it. I imagine people are still going to make human-to-human connections, and they're going to need to find ways to make that happen.
I think more people should know about this because, I mean, nobody, like, it's not an industry standard right now to really build genuine connection with your prospects by sending, you know, like a contact campaign. And do you see that happening, you know, in the next maybe 10 years with in the marketing industry, where it's so personalized that they are able to achieve this on a much larger scale? Or it becomes a commonplace where it's companies would, you know, use this as the main way of communicating with potential customers.
Well, first of all, I would say you'd never get a second chance to make a first impression. And so if the person is important enough, then I think you go in with the biggest gun first. And that wouldn't be email. I mean, emails, you were just mentioning, it still works, but we can all agree that it's overused. It's really overused. And I think it's, which is not to say that it's impossible to make connections with it, but just, I don't know, just the cadences and so forth that you see people use it. Pardon me, I don't know that really creates a lot of human-to-human connection. I mean, I think you get the sense that you're being campaigned, and there's no one on the other end of that really waiting to hear from you because they sent only that to you, right? I mean, you don't get that sense from email, but that's not always true of email. You know, it might be that I wrote to you and I said, "Hey, Gilbert, we don't know each other, but I noticed that you started a golf society in Hong Kong, and I would love to talk to you about what the differences are between, you know, if I start engaging you that way, well, that's a very personal engagement. It's not a campaign. And you know that there's a person on the other end of that saying, I'd love to connect with you. Would you get back to me? You probably would. But you know, if it looks like a campaign, you're not. I'm saying if it looks like a campaign though, you probably won't respond to it. And it just, you know, our email inboxes are just, they're so cluttered. I think it makes it really difficult to stand out unless it's a very personal, a personal doesn't really even cover it. It's just a communication that I might make with you because I know something about you and I want to connect with you. And maybe I want to sell you something or maybe I don't, but I'd love to ask you a question. And it's a question you probably would want to answer. Those kinds of things I think would make sense. But otherwise, I think you got to go in with the thing that gives you the best impression, creates the best impression of you.
Before you go, Stu, how can people find out more about you, get access to your previous book, How to Get a Meeting with Anyone, and where can they see the next book?
Well, you can get both How to Get a Meeting with Anyone, and then I'm going to hold it up one more time. It's shameless, I know, but so you recognize it, get the meeting. So you can get both of those at Amazon, Barnes & Noble, Books A Million. And then otherwise, connect with me on LinkedIn. My name's Stu Heinecke, S-T-U, and then H-E-I-N-E-C-E-C-K-E.
Awesome. Thanks for coming on the show, Stu. You shared a lot of wisdom, and I'm sure that our listeners today got a lot of value out of it.
Thank you so much. Thanks for having me on.
So everyone stay tuned for the next episode every Tuesday, and we'll see you soon on the show.